Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 660, titled Walking the Snake in the Middle East, Part 1, The Von Bolschfang Legacy. This has been recorded on January 18th of the year 2009. As veteran listeners to the program will no doubt surmise, even if they didn't hear Side 1, the reference in the title of this program, as well as in next week's program, which is going to be Walking the Snake in the Middle East Part 2, is to the Nazi track Serpent's Walk. That is published by National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the National Alliance, arguably the most important domestic American Nazi group. And like the Turner Diaries, published by the same publisher, I believe that is not the novel that it purports to be, but rather is a blueprint, a manifesto for what the Third Reich gone underground is planning to do. And by way of sort of cueing this side in with the theme of not only this two-part series, but also what I talked about in Side 1, quoting Ahmed Huber, associate of the German neo-Nazi NPD, director of the Muslim Brotherhood Bank al-Taqwa, a protege of François Janoux, the heir to the political last will and testament and collective literary works of Adolf Hitler, Joseph Goebbels, and Martin Bormann, and also someone who, through the Muslim Brotherhood and the Bank al-Taqwa, is directly linked to the upper echelon of the GOP, and Grover Norquist, and somebody we're going to talk about later in the program, Karl Rove. In an article in the San Francisco Chronicle in March of 2002, Ahmed Huber forecast, quote, "The U.S. is the ally of 15 million Jews against 1.3 billion Muslims. It is allied with 5 million Israelis against 200 million Arabs. We will bring down the Israel lobby and change foreign policy. We'll do it in America. When it happens, you'll understand," unquote. Well, I would submit that that's exactly what is taking place now, and this two-part series is going to attempt at putting into place some of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that is the organization that's doing it, namely the Underground Reich and its associated elements. Now, bear in mind that Otto von Bolschfing was part of the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit. Now, Reinhard Gehlen was Hitler's Eastern Front intelligence chief during World War II. He was very close, although never actually a member of the Nazi Party, let alone the SS. He was very close to both. And during the closing phases of World War II, his organization was under the complete stewardship of the Sicherheitsdienst, the SS intelligence service. And one of the points that Carl Oglesby makes in his article from Covert Action Information Bulletin from the fall of 1990, The Secret Treaty of Fort Hunt, was that the Gehlen organization was actually a branch of the Odessa, the post-war SS underground, and as such was a functioning element of an underground Third Reich. In a footnote to the passage that I read before the break, Oglesby writes, "As Gehlen was about to leave for the United States, he left a message for Bonn with another of his top aides, Gerhard Wessel, quote, I am to tell you from Gehlen that he has discussed with Hitler's successor, Admiral Karl von Dönitz, and Gehlen's superior and chief of staff, General Franz Halder, the question of continuing his work with the Americans. Both were in agreement," unquote. And Oglesby goes on to comment that this indicates that the German chain of command was still intact after the formal conclusion of combat, and that the Gehlen org was part of that chain of command. Happily now, due to the various people that have helped me over the years with the broadcast, and in particular the heroic efforts of the current webmaster for SpitfireList.com, all of the old archive shows as well as the lectures are available for download for free. I strongly recommend that listeners download the massive archive show, AFA 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War, and read the description. It's very important for an understanding of this particular program. But again, understand that Otto von Bolschfing was part of the Gehlen organization, which it was in turn an element of a Third Reich gone underground. In the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, which you can download for free, you can read about that Nazi party going underground, and you can read about the fact that Martin Bormann was the head of the Nazi party in exile, and his intelligence and security chief, Heinrich Müller, former head of the Gestapo, held the formal title of Minister of the Interior in exile. Bear in mind, and this is part of what we're talking about in this side, bear in mind that Otto von Bolschfing's protege, Helena von Damm, picked all of the personnel from which Ronald Reagan made his appointments when he was governor of California, did the same thing when he was president of the United States. So what we're looking at with the Republican Party, basically, are the personnel selections of Otto von Bolschwing, and beyond that, a Third Reich gone underground, which is why in the article Farewell to All That in the February issue of Vanity Fair, February of 2009, we have this grim litany about the Bush administration, the threat of 9/11 ignored, the threat of Iraq hyped and manipulated, Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib, Hurricane Katrina, the shredding of civil liberties, the rise of Iran, global warming, economic disaster. How did one two-term presidency go so wrong? Well, it's because it basically recapitulated the presidencies of Bush 1 and Ronald Reagan. The personnel that staffed those presidencies was selected by Helena von Damm and through Helena von, beyond Helena von Damm, Otto von Bolschwing. And this is what the Third Reich had in mind. The United States is all but destroyed. I think it is going to be destroyed and ultimately will break up into a number of component states. And what we're going to be looking at in this series is not only the shift in public opinion vis-a-vis Israel, which was forecast by Ahmed Huber, but also how Otto von Bolschwing envisioned Zionism as sort of a geopolitical agent provocateur. In this series, I'm not going to get too much of a chance to really, well, I'm going to do my best to try to do justice to the subject, but one really cannot do that. To make a very, very long story very, very short, the Israeli cause is just, though flawed in certain respects, and the cause of the Palestinians, though pitiable in certain respects, is not. However, it is in the exposition of that, the history of a century or so, that basically the truth has been lost. And indeed, as ticked off as I get about all the endemic lying, I'm sort of brought back time and again to the starting point for me. I've been on the air now about 30 years. What first motivated me to do what I do was the assassination of President Kennedy. And it is as vexed as I get about the lying in the media, and beyond that, the dishonest representations of reality within academia. Still, when the media and when the academic establishment get together and say that when the President of the United States is murdered as part of a coup, which is what the assassination of President Kennedy was, and when they cover it up, how can people possibly know the truth? And what we're going to do, though, is to take a look at the very savvy insights of Otto von Bolschwing, who understood that Israel/Zionism, when he developed the strategy, there was no country called Israel. It was in the pre-World War II period. But Otto von Bolschwing understood that Zionism, the drive for a Jewish state in the Middle East, could be used very, very effectively as a stratagem, sort of a geopolitical agent provocateur concept, in order to alienate the Arabs in the Muslims in general, the Arabs in particular, thereby driving them into the arms of the Third Reich and giving the Third Reich control of not only the Muslim world and the Earth Island, that vast stretch of land embodying most of the world's territory, most of the world's population, most of the world's resources, and most of the world's oil, and across the middle of it is a large stretch of Muslim population, but beyond that, it could give the underground or the Third Reich and also its post-war underground manifestation control of the world. What we're going to do is to excerpt some sections. We've excerpted these before. Some sections of the book, The Secret War Against the Jews, How Western Espionage Betrayed the Jewish People, co-authored by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, published in softcover by St. Martin's Press. John Loftus, by the way, a frequent guest on these airwaves. Now, as you listen to the von Bolschwing strategy vis-a-vis the manipulation of Zionism as sort of a global agent provocateur, remember that it was Otto von Bolschwing's protege, Helena von Damm, who picked the bleepin' Republican Party for all intents and purposes, or its current manifestation, including the people who have engineered the horrors of the twin administrations of George W. Bush. In The Secret War Against the Jews, of Otto von Bolschwing's policies and stratagems, Loftus and Ahrens write, Adolf Eichmann was replaced on the Middle Eastern scene by a far more skilled intelligence officer, Otto von Bolschwing. Before World War II, von Bolschwing set up an import-export business in Palestine as a cover for his espionage initiatives. He was an educated man from a good family and an enthusiastic supporter of Hitler. After the war, von Bolschwing became one of Alan Dulles' senior agents in the CIA. Dulles helped von Bolschwing emigrate to California, where he established a business association with Helena von Damm, later Ronald Reagan's ambassador to Austria. In later years, his business went bankrupt and he was forced to surrender his American citizenship on the grounds that he was a Nazi war criminal. He was just the sort of fellow to get along well with Jack Philby. He hated Jews. Now, again, the reference there is to Helena von Damm. It's a company called TCI, which was an electronics company in the Silicon Valley. It was involved with various types of electronic intelligence, and a couple of its spinoffs were utilized by Albert Hakim and company for some of the vehicles in the Iran-Contra affair. But again, for the purposes of the present discussion, remember that it was Otto von Bolschwing's protege, Helena von Damm, who basically selected all the people who've been playing out on the GOP stages for basically the last quarter of a century plus. Now, to Otto von Bolschwing's stratagem vis-a-vis Zionism, and the other people that you're going to hear about here, one is Jack Philby, full name Bridger St. John Philby, the father, by the way, of noted British spy and Soviet double agent Kim Philby. Jack Philby was a British spy, a raving anti-Semite, and a double agent for the Third Reich. You'll also hear about Prince King Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia, the founder of the House of Saud. Loftus and Aaron's right in the secret war against the Jews. In the 1930s, Otto von Bolschwing was a realist. He knew full well that the Muslim bigots would never accept even a token immigration of Jews to Palestine. Philby agreed. After more than a decade of anti-Zionist propaganda, quietly supervised by the British Secret Service, the climate was hardly receptive toward a homeland for the Jews in the Middle East. Still, there was profit to be made in the attempt. In any future war, bear in mind this is in the pre-World War II period, the relatively late 30s, in any future war, von Bolschwing said, the support of the Muslim world would be essential to Hitler's plans. Not to mention that Philby and Ibn Saud could make a healthy profit by secretly ensuring Germany's supply of oil. Note the secretly ensuring Germany's supply of oil, because it was in this time period that the Nazis began to secretly import oil. They did so in combination with a number of very powerful people. One could not separate out the Standard Oil companies from the Third Reich and IG Farben, as discussed in the miscellaneous archive show M11, for example, and revealed in many books that are available for download on the Spitfire website. The head of Texaco, the Torkil Reber, was actually a Nazi spy, another of the independent oil people who worked for the Nazis and who was a personal friend of Hitler and who will figure very prominently in our discussion is J. Paul Getty, the independent oil man. We're going to talk about Getty later, but he not only shipped oil to the Nazis, he was not only a close personal friend of Hitler, he was one of the collaborators of Otto von Bolschwing, Philby, and Ibn Saud in this period. And as we are going to see later, the Getty interests are very, very close to Otto von Bolschwing and to the political milieu surrounding Otto von Bolschwing and his political allies. So note here, when Loftus and Aaron's right, not to mention that Philby and Ibn Saud could make a healthy profit by secretly ensuring Germany's supply of oil, one of the people with whom they were working was J. Paul Getty, and the Getty interests remained very close to von Bolschwing after the war. Continuing with the Loftus and Aaron's text, Hitler would guarantee that the Muslims received favored status. Indeed, they later had their own SS division, raised ironically from among the Bosnian Muslim population, subjected to ethnic cleansing by the Serbs and Croats 50 years later. The SS division was personally blessed by Philby's old friend, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. The Mufti had been Hitler's honored guest and was even taken on guided tours of the Nazi death camps. Hitler promised that when Germany won the war, he would guarantee that the Arab states would be free of British colonial domination. They would be independent states and full allies with the Third Reich. All of Philby's dreams could come to pass. All that was needed was a little push, unquote. Von Bolschwing's proposition was simple. Philby should encourage British support for Zionist emigration schemes, penetrate the secret negotiations, and then leak them to the press, with the certain knowledge of the popular discontent that would result among Muslims. the Arab backlash to a new British Zionist initiative might not drive the region into the arms of the Third Reich, but it would certainly keep the oil-producing Arabs, quote, neutral, unquote, but actually tilting toward the Nazis. Now, for our purposes here, interrupting briefly, just imagine in place of British support for Zionism engineered by von Bolschwing, American support for Israel slash Zionism as realized in the post-war period. During the Cold War itself, Israel was America's unsinkable aircraft carrier, so to speak, in that area when the Soviets were backing the Arabs. It has now become an inconvenience because, long story made short, the Palestinians are backed by the Saudis and the oil producers. Israel got nothing but a little high tech and a tiny bit of land. The oil card wins the day, so to speak. But again, for our purposes of understanding what's taking place, substitute American post-war support for Israel slash Zionism for the British support here, but note that the von Bolschwing gambit appears to have been very successfully realized. And bear in mind that it was von Bolschwing's protege who selected the Reagan and Bush administrations, all five of them. Continuing with Loftus and Aaron's account. It was no secret that King Ibn Saud had more than a little sympathy for the German position on the Zionist issue. His extreme anti-Jewish feelings were made clear to a British diplomat in 1937. The king said his hatred for the Jews, unquote, stemmed from their persecution and rejection of Christ and their subsequent rejection, unquote, of Muhammad. Ibn Saud added that, quote, for a Muslim to kill a Jew in war or for him to be killed by a Jew ensures him an immediate entry in heaven and into the august presence of God Almighty. According to several of our sources, this was one of the aspects of Islam that most appealed to Philby. He had all sorts of schemes that could aid the Nazis who meant business when it came to the Jews. Our sources say Jack obtained the king's permission to become a double agent for the Third Reich, publicly helping the Jews, privately aiding the Nazis, always making a profit for the House of Saud and, naturally, for himself as well. The scheme appealed to Philby's clandestine nature. The more he worked to link Britain and Zionism publicly, the more damage he could do to the empire's position in the Middle East, and again substitute the U.S. for Britain in the post-war period. Continuing. In fact, the king and Jack Philby were playing a nasty little game with the Jews. Despite their disagreement over the partition plan in early 1939, Ibn Saud sent Philby to London to be on hand for the Palestine Roundtable Conference. It does seem rather strange that the king would send someone whose views conflicted so clearly with his own. Apparently, Philby's true mission was sabotage, unquote. In order to set all sides against each other, Philby developed his own plan on the Palestine question, which he put to British officials as well as to the Jews and the Arabs. In February of 1939, he had a secret lunch with Chaim Weizmann and David Ben-Gurion and introduced the Zionist leaders to Fuad Hamza, Ibn Saud's longtime foreign affairs official. Philby offered the Zionists substantial Jewish immigration into Palestine if they would support the country coming under Saudi domination, unquote. And, of course, that didn't work. Weizmann was blamed when the secret plan was leaked to the press and there was no further progress. As will be seen, all of Philby's schemes with the Zionists had a suspicious habit of coming to nothing. There is a definite pattern of sabotage with the Zionists as fall guys, unquote, every time. Amazingly, the Zionists stuck by Philby for nearly five critical years while he treated the game as an auction, unquote. Well, again, bear in mind that what we're talking about here really is the post-war geopolitics, but note Philby's insight here. And beyond that, note Otto von Bolschwing's insight as well. And bear in mind that it was Otto von Bolschwing who, through his protege Helena von Damm, staffed the Republican administrations of Ronald Reagan twice, George H.W. Bush once, and George W. Bush twice. Now, bear in mind, too, that one of the oil men who worked with Otto von Bolschwing and others to basically get oil to the Nazis in the pre-World War II and early World War II period was none other than Texas oil billionaire Jean-Paul Getty. Getty was pro-Nazi and actually was a personal friend of Adolf Hitler. Among the sources for this, and there are numerous sources, but the Telegraph, British Daily, had the following article by Peter Day from August 25th of 2003, Getty helped traitors sell oil to Hitler. It reads in part, the Texan oil billionaire John Paul Getty was at the heart of a conspiracy to provide support to Hitler's Germany early in the Second World War, according to newly released intelligence documents. The file links Getty to a shadowy network of financiers who supplied the Nazis with fuel in defiance of a British blockade and accuses him of gathering spies and traitors around him as at his fashionable Hotel Pierre in New York. It records that he returned from Berlin in 1939 talking breezily of his old friend Hitler, unquote, and that his business contacts included Serge Rubinstein, a notorious fraudster who ran part of his empire through London. The suspect persons file, prepared by the Foreign Office for the Ministry of Economic Warfare, has just been declassified at the National Archives at Kew, southwest London. It appears to be the work of the British Security Coordination Team in New York, run by William Stevenson, Churchill's secret envoy to President Roosevelt, codenamed Intrepid. He was rumored to be behind the assassination of one of the leading figures in the deal to try to stop it from continuing. The dossier was compiled after the detention in Trinidad in October of 1941 of the banker who worked for Hermann Göring, shifting Nazi funds out of Europe. He was carrying $100,000 cash and had another $1 million in a South American bank. Bear in mind that these are late 30s dollars, much more money today. So note that in this period when Otto von Bolschwing was hatching his geopolitical plan to use Zionism as sort of a global agent provocateur concept in order to drive the Muslim and Arab populations into the arms of the Third Reich, that J. Paul Getty was one of the people who was not only working with the Nazis to clandestinely ship oil to Hitler, but who also was a personal friend of Adolf Hitler. Now, one of the articles that I'm going to include in or at least excerpts of which I'm going to include in the description for the Record 660, but that we don't have time to go into now, is an article from the San Jose Mercury News of November 20th of 1981. It's called Ex-Nazi's Brilliant U.S. Career Strangled in a Web of Lies. It was authored by Pete Carey, who later won a Pulitzer Prize for his work on the Nazi flight capital. It was an article I played a small, very small role in breaking way back in 1981. And in addition to some sadly relatively superficial discussion of the von Baum, von Bolschwing connection, there is discussion of the many powerful political allies of Otto von Bolschwing. And one of the things we're going to be looking at during the conclusion of this broadcast, in addition to bearing in mind what von Bolschwing had in mind vis-a-vis the use of Zionism as a global agent provocateur to drive the Muslims and Arabs into the arms of the Third Reich, and also perhaps in the post-war period we can think of driving popular opinion into the arms of the Reich as well through manipulation and control of the media. One of the concepts that I'm going to be introducing are von Bolschwing Democrats, because indeed, in the panoply of power surrounding Otto von Bolschwing, we find people like Justice William Newsom. Judge William Newsom was a good personal friend of Otto von Bolschwing and an investor in many of von Bolschwing's businesses. And Justice Newsom's son, Gavin Newsom, is mayor of San Francisco. More about that a little later. In addition to talking about von Bolschwing Democrats, because there are some of those as part of the legacy of Otto von Bolschwing, we're also going to be talking about another thing that is factoring into the politics in Israel, namely Borman Jews, and also factoring into some of the negative publicity about Israel as well. Someone who, although ostensibly of Jewish extraction, has been a major thorn in the side of Israel, is none other than George Soros, who almost certainly is a Borman Jew, and who has helped to assist the careers of many of the people in the so-called progressive sector today, who are most adamant in their criticisms of Israel. So von Bolschwing Democrats and Borman Jews. Again, bearing in mind Otto von Bolschwing's pivotal role in the Republican Party and the central role that von Bolschwing played in devising that stratagem in the pre-World War II period of using Zionism to provoke people in the direction of the Nazis. There's another link between the Newsoms and the von Bolshevik Democrats, I guess we could call them. Following obituary is from the San Francisco Chronicle of November 24th of 2008. It's by Julian Guthrie of the Chronicle. Belinda Barbara Newsom, politics filled her life. This is the sister of Judge Newsom. Belinda Barbara Newsom, who was born into one politically prominent Bay Area family and married into another, died Saturday at her home in San Francisco at the age of 73. She was surrounded by friends and family who on Sunday recalled her love of adventure, her courage to persevere through tragedy, and her refusal to be defined by anyone else's accomplishments. Ms. Newsom, who went by Barbara and whose married name was Pelosi, was the sister-in-law of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the aunt of San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom. Note again that that Ms. Newsom joins the late Ms. Newsom joined the von Bolshevik milieu with that of Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi's husband Paul Pelosi became a billionaire in the gaming machine industry. Doesn't everybody? And Barbara Newsom's son Gavin Newsom, rather her nephew Gavin Newsom, became mayor of San Francisco. Gavin Newsom is the son of Judge William Newsom, and in that regard, one might want to remember that whereas most of the Democratic Party wanted to keep the hot-button issue of gay marriage off of the political front burner in 2004, it was Gavin Newsom who put it on the political front burner with his controversial and virtually single-handed renunciation of California law at the time, which barred gay marriage. When asked about why he had done this, he responded to basically just a smirk at one press conference. A lot of Democrats blame Gavin Newsom's gambit, so to speak, for helping to bring out the Christian right wing and much of the Republican Party base in 2004, and that and the usual Republican electoral shenanigans basically handed the presidency once again to George Bush and the von Bolshevik von Dom proteges who staffed his administration. The Newsoms are very, very close to the Gettys, as are the Pelosis. And the Gettys have basically, although they engage in art and the funding of philanthropy, the Gettys have basically maintained their stripe. But note the Getty influence, and note that the Gettys remain very, very close to the Newsoms and the von Bolshevik, and note the Pelosi family connection to the same. Another Getty connection to bear in mind here, and bear in mind Getty's position in shipping oil to the Nazis, his position as a good friend of Adolf Hitler. What do you suppose Karl Rove's family were involved with? Now, Rove himself was an orphan who was adopted, but he retained, however, a very loving relationship with his stepfather, who was gay. From the New York Daily News of September 6th of 2006. The following is a review that came out on the book The Architect about Karl Rove. President Bush's chief political strategist Karl Rove has cunningly used homophobia to score victories for the Republican Party. But Rove, and bear in mind the Gavin Newsom gambit in 2004 with gay marriage, credited by many Democratic strategists with having given the election to George Bush, but Rove is said to have been far from fearful of the gay man he called dad. According to a new bio, Rove loved and adored his stepfather, Lewis Rove, even though the Getty oil geologist abandoned Carl's mother, Reba, to live as a homosexual. By the way, Rove's father was not just a Getty oil geologist. He was a corporate geologist. This wasn't somebody who went out into the field to take core samples to see if oil was present in a given stratum. This was a guy who looked at the map on the wall in the corporate offices and said, well, why don't we move here? Why don't we move there? Point being, Karl Rove's father, to whom he was very close, was a corporate geologist for Getty Oil. And in part two, we're going to take a look at the manipulation and control of the media, some of the things that have been apparently happening on the ground in the latest Mideast war, as opposed to the way the media have been relating them. And we're going to take a look once again at the concept of the virtual state. However, this concludes side two of Walking the Snake in the Middle East, part one, the von Bolshevik legacy. This has been recorded on January 18th of the year 2009. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.